from KQED.
This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. From today until the 10th of December in Cancun, Mexico, world and environmental leaders will be meeting for the next round, the 16th Conference of International Climate Negotiations. It has been a year since Copenhagen, where many hopes for strong action were dashed, and this year has been predicted to be the hottest year ever. And by that, I'm talking about climate. What can we expect to come out of the meetings in Cancun? Well, this is the focus of our second half hour here this morning. And joining us from Cancun is Gretchen Weber, who is multimedia producer for KQED's Climate Watch. And good morning, Gretchen. Good to have you with us.
Thanks. Hi, Michael.
Hi. Give us a sense of what it looks like down there. It's a lot of confusion with transportation and the like, at least from what it's been reported.
Yeah, it's absolutely, there's a lot of confusion with transportation. I would say it's crowded here, but it's not crazy crowded. There's definitely thousands of people, but, you know, because expectations seem to be so much lower this year than they were last year, they're not expecting quite the same number of amount of crowds, but they can't say for sure. But the logistics really are challenging. I mean, everything, no cars or taxis are allowed anywhere near where the negotiations are happening. Everything has to happen on a UN bus. You take a bus to a staging area where you go through security, and then you take another bus to the place where the negotiations are happening. And I left really early this morning from my hotel. It probably took me about 2 hours to go 8 kilometers.
Wow. Well, you talk about low expectations, and of course that's what we keep hearing, as well as a lack of sense of direction. You've got the extension of Kyoto Protocol is only going up to December 31st, 2012. You would think that there would be at least some kind of scramble to get something down, to actually bring those low expectations to a higher ground. What's your sense of that?
Well, like you said, the hopes were really high last year for the global binding deal, and that didn't happen, and a lot of people were disappointed and did a lot of soul searching, and it just seems that everyone this year is trying to keep those expectations low, because in fact there are a lot of smaller decisions that need to be made in order to pave the way for the global deal. So it seems like that's what a lot of the negotiators are going to be focusing on, are these sort of technical decisions and these steps that could pave the way for a deal next year in South Africa, or some people are even saying after that. And some of the things that people do think there's going to be hope for this year, everyone's talking about RED, which stands for Reducing Emissions with Deforestation, and that's a really hot topic here and one area where people think there's hope to sort of work on smaller deals for deforestation. And another thing people are really focusing on is sort of the financial stuff, working out the logistics of how climate change funding from developed nations is actually going to flow to these developing countries. That's something that many countries committed to last year and agreed on, but the details haven't been worked out. Other technical things are how countries are actually going to measure their emissions, how they're actually going to report them, and then how they're going to verify them. And that certainly has to be set before a global deal can happen. So it's kind of these stepping stones that people hope to focus on that could maybe pave the way for next year.
I'm wondering if you get a sense, there was an article in the Sunday New York Times on the editorial page that suggested that maybe some other potent warming agents ought to be included in terms of negotiations, as opposed to putting all the emphasis on carbon dioxide. They should be looking at short-lived gases, methane and some hydrofluorocarbons and lower atmospheric ozone, dark soot particles, these kinds of things. Are you hearing anything along those lines? In other words, to make perhaps less ambitious sorts of objectives here?
Well, it's still really early. They're just opening today. But with the people that I have been talking to, most people are saying that everything has to get looked at. We have to put everything on the table and find all these. And actually, that article kind of goes along with this idea of finding the stepping stones that we can put in place in advance of any deal. So yeah, I think a lot of people are hoping to sort of find any of those little nuggets along the way that can reduce any kind of emissions to kind of buy us some time in case this process takes a lot longer than most people are hoping.
Well, Gretchen, many thanks for joining us, and good luck in continuing to, well, not only cover, but let us know what you're finding in Cancun. Thank you so much again for joining us.
Great. Thank you so much, Michael.
Gretchen Weber is multimedia producer for KQED's Climate Watch. And, well, right here in studio is the senior editor at KQED's Climate Watch. Craig Miller is with us. His blog is at kqed.org/climatewatch. Good morning, Craig.
Good morning, Michael.
Glad to have you. Louis Bloomberg is also here in studio with us. He directs California Climate Change Team for the Nature Conservancy. And welcome to the program.
Thank you, Michael.
Good to have you back with us. Let me begin with you, Craig. China seems to be a key player here. Well, China and India, obviously, along with the United States. But I'm speaking about China because they could actually bring forth a diplomatic coup if they have a program, because the United States doesn't seem to have a program.
That's right. And actually, we're going into this conference with tensions a little bit high between China and the United States right now on climate negotiations. I think the critical question is just that, Michael, where the leadership is going to come from this time around. I'm actually holding in my hand the letter that the Obama administration sent to the UN after Copenhagen last year, informing them of the administration's, quote, desire to be associated with the Copenhagen Accord, as modest as it was, and pledging or hoping to reduce emissions about 17%. In conformity with U.S. energy and climate legislation that was anticipated, as we know that hasn't happened, and frankly isn't likely to happen anytime soon. So I think without that, without some key leadership from countries like the United States, it may have to come from China, frankly, at this point. I'm not sure where we go from here. And some people, including Christiana Figueres, the new head of the UN climate effort, have even suggested that maybe it's time for a new paradigm. This top-down process, this multinational binding agreement idea with 190 countries, okay, maybe it isn't working. Maybe it's time to look at a different method. Maybe we work from the bottom up, and that's a big part of the buzz this year too.
Well, the Obama administration seems to be putting its hopes on regulations, especially EPA regulations, and I mean they've asked for new rules. With this new Congress, it almost seems like cap and trade is pretty much dead.
I think cap and trade is dead, at least for a good long time. Even Joe Lieberman, who was one of the sponsors of the, I guess I'll say, stillborn Senate bill, a climate bill, recently has said within the last week that cap and trade is off the table. Climate has – the word has more or less vanished from the president's public vocabulary. President Obama said in his first news conference after the midterm elections that cap and trade was one means to an end, and going forward he'll be looking for other means. I'm not getting any indication from anybody. Even Carl Pope recently told me, if you're looking for who is the chairman of the Sierra Club, recently said to me in a debate I was moderating, if you're looking for a staunch supporter of cap and trade, you won't find it here, which kind of surprised me, frankly. So it seems like everybody's jumping off the cap and trade bus, except for California. Of course, we're forging ahead with it here, with dragging a few other states along with us.
Well, that brings up Lewis Bloomberg, the fact that Governor Schwarzenegger really started this whole subnational move of R20. I mean, what are we seeing along those lines? That is, close relationships between public and private and partnerships that would essentially develop and implement low carbon and climate resilient projects through the states.
Well, Michael, there's a whole host of action at the subnational level, at states, provinces, and cities. This is where people are actually doing things to address climate change. And as Craig mentioned, California has a cap-and-trade program fully underway through the climate law AB 32 that was passed in 2006. So one of the activities that the Nature Conservancy will be involved in Cancun is highlighting the success and the action that's happening by states and provinces. We focus on the role of forests in climate change, and the governor's climate and forest task force that Governor Schwarzenegger created at his first summit 3 years ago will be holding several events. And so we're hoping to shine a light on the progress that states and provinces are making in addressing climate change. Ultimately, we think 80% of the actions are going to have to come at the state or local level, even if we do have an international treaty.
Where do you come up with that figure of 80%?
I got it from the governor.
Well, but you are working assiduously to combat deforestation and to do action against forest degradation. But what about the subnational role with respect to really moving climate change and climate policy forward in a significant way?
Well, I think, as Craig says, we may need a new paradigm, and action from the ground up is proven in California as a way to get action at higher levels. We saw that with the Clean Air Act, the Clean Water Act in California, the tailpipe emission bill. So policy, especially environmental policy, but not exclusively, that starts in California can drive action at higher levels.
I'm going to open the phone lines. What are your hopes with respect to Cancun, the United Nations Climate Change Conference? As I said, expectations are low for the 16th annual gathering. World leaders trying to reach an agreement on key goals to slow climate change. You may want to voice your own opinion here, or you may simply have a question or comment. Certainly, there's an attempt to extend Kyoto and the Kyoto protocols, and there was a great deal of disappointment last year, as we've said, with everybody saying Copenhagen, and you know, I keep thinking of Hans Christian Andersen, wonderful, wonderful Copenhagen, but I think Copenhagen is correct. You feel free to join us here. Our toll-free number is available to you, and we welcome your phone calls. It's 866-733-6786. Again, feel free to call us now, 866-733-6786, for you to join the program. You can also do that by emailing us, forum@kqed.org, or you can post a question or comment on our website by simply going to kqed.org/forum and clicking on this segment. What about, Craig, this, fast start financial support to the developing countries, since I mentioned Copenhagen, deciding on really a lot of money? I think we're talking about $30 billion, aren't we?
Well, at the time, I mean, the number that was thrown out was $100 billion. That again, was a sort of agreement in principle that still hasn't been formalized. This is one of this is a piece of the unfinished business from last year that they had to figure out what they're going to do about this whole idea of developing countries saying to developed countries, which are have created most of the emissions that have brought about global warming, the anthropogenic part of global warming, and saying, okay, you guys caused the problem. We can use a little help here. If you're going to tell us now you want us to play by the same rules going forward and reduce our emissions as we develop, we need a little help. And so this is the issue, and it still has to be worked out where that money's going to come from and how much.
The other thing, Louis Bloomberg, that seems to, well, be key, you're talking about new paradigms and all that. What about, you know, once there is a plan in place, assuming there is some kind of plan in place, and there was from Copenhagen, there was from Kyoto, what about all the monitoring and reporting and verifying?
Well, again, California is showing the world how to do it, at least in regards to forests. The term MRV, monitoring, reporting, and verification, is often associated with the forest issue, or what we call RED, reduced emissions from deforestation and forest degradation. California has a set of protocols for monitoring and reporting and verifying emission reductions from forest activities on the land use, on the land. And we're using, again, showcasing those in California and in Cancun. There will be California leaders coming down later in the process again, as they have the last 3 years, to showcase California's leadership on this issue. We think that can be done with the forest, and we're doing it here in California. And we want, again, serve as a model for what we hope others will pick up.
Craig Miller.
Michael, another place where California might be able to show some successful leadership is in this idea of renewable energy, too. We have here a regulation at the moment, not a law per se, though, requiring 33% renewable energy by 2020. And it's beginning to look like about the best we could hope for on the national level in this country is a national renewable energy standard. If Congress could at least get that through, that would be a start, and that would be another example of where California's going to lead the way.
Well, maybe a lame duck Congress. What do you think about the Congress that's going to be coming to us in January, though?
Tough proposition. There are a relatively large number of new electees to Congress who question whether climate change is even happening or if it's even caused by human activity, it's not looking good.
Let me get our callers in, and we'll go first to you, Ken. Welcome to Forum. You're on the air.
Hi. Wow. That's the first time I've ever been on.
Well, welcome. Glad to have you.
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm unfortunately a pessimist. I see a lot of talking and not much getting done. There's too much national interest involved to come to any agreements. And with Republicans coming into the United States Congress, they would rather, much rather, have a Gulf oil spill than any kind of regulation. They have caused disaster in this country, and they will continue to do so as much as they possibly can. And I think if we're going to get climate change legislation or action, it's going to take a huge worldwide disaster before anybody really gets serious about it.
Well, thank you, I think, for that pessimistic or assessment. But, Louis Bloomberg, I hear you being much more optimistic, particularly on the subnational level.
Well, I am optimistic because I see people taking action in their daily lives. I see state governments taking action, and provinces in Brazil are passing laws to reduce deforestation and develop low-carbon sustainable development programs. We have a project in East Kalimantan in Barau, where the Nature Conservancy is working with the local Bupati to find ways to develop the economy there and keep the peat forest and the standing forest. So I think there are a lot of things that can be done, a lot of things that are being done. Will we get a global overarching treaty? I don't know.
Well, you mentioned, moving toward a green economy. I think one of the biggest thorns in this or obstacles has been the concern in developing nations that it would damage their own economic growth if they became more green. There's also kind of a paranoia, Craig Miller. I don't use that word advisedly, but, you know, that the West is keeping developing nations down from the perspective of those developing nations, many of them.
I don't know. I don't know about that specifically, but I do question, again, on the optimist-pessimist scale, I fall somewhere in between Lewis Bloomberg here and the first caller, and that I'm not entirely without hope that something will happen, that some progress will be made. But what I do really question at the moment is whether the leadership for that is going to come from this country. Even the EPA's efforts to regulate carbon dioxide, the greenhouse gases, are, as you know, are already under attack.
And the United States has failed to pass legislation.
Yes.
That's kind of the bottom line, at least at this point. Let me get Howard on here from Miami, Florida. Hi, Howard. You're on.
Hi. How are you?
Okay.
I was listening to NPR the other day, and I was listening to, I think he was a paleontologist from Australia, who had commented, as I understood it, that climate change has already gone to an extent where the water levels of the oceans are inevitably going to rise. And I would like to get your comment about that. Are we really just fiddling or while is drowning? And the other thing is, I read an article recently where the mayors of the cities are going to be more aggressive in putting in adopting regulations to try and cut the emissions on a more local basis. Reminds me, I think it was Napoleon that said, show me where my people are going so that I may lead them. And that sounds like a grassroots effort as part of this, the problem. So I'd be interested in your comments about how far down the road we are to not going to be able to reverse and change.
Feel free to jump in, either one of you. Lewis Bloomberg.
I'm happy to jump in. I think what the caller is referring to here is what we call adaptation, response to climate change. So we do need to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, but there is already sufficient carbon dioxide in the atmosphere to produce impacts going forward. So we will have sea level rise. Will it be, a foot or will it be 10 feet? Predictions are it could be as high as 10 feet. So there's going to be a lot of threats to coastal areas. There are going to be impacts, and society needs to respond. That's one of the tracks at Cancun that's looking optimistic is the adaptation track, the providing funding for the most at-risk countries. We think at the Nature Conservancy that nature plays a role in that. For example, restoring mangrove forests can help protect the population from sea level rise and also their food supply. So there is a need to respond. Things will be different, and the question I have really is will the response be in time? I'm fairly optimistic that we'll turn this around at some point, but will it be in time? And I think the sense of urgency is really missing.
Does this conference in Cancun continue to have a shadow over it, what was at least presented in the media as a scandal in the UK about figures on climate change and all of that?
I think that the spike, in the effect that it had on public opinion has passed somewhat. There's a bit of an overhang, a bit of a hangover from what you're referring to. Some refer to as climate gate, although there never was, and several independent investigations have now shown that there was no scientific fraud involved. There was no cover up involved. It's pretty much cleared, everybody involved except for the people who stole the emails, and it's still unclear whether they will be caught or prosecuted. But I think that most of the effect of that was confined also to the United States and to the United Kingdom. The rest of the world, I think, throughout that still understood what the threat was. And there is a lot of global warming, I think, already built into the system. There's a lot of uncertainty about exactly what it will mean, and that's precisely the problem with kind of selling climate change, if you will, as a policy issue with people, and that is it's a very slowly evolving problem. It's not like an oil spill. It's going to evolve. It's going to unfold over a number of years, and the consequences could be very bad, but because they're not mostly right here, right now, it's hard to motivate people.
Well, let's look at, just for a moment before we go to more calls here, what the Obama administration is asking for. They're asking for a 17% cut. U.S. target actually came out of Copenhagen, and that would be by the year 2020. Is that realistic, Louis Bloomberg, that figure?
Yes, I think so. California is required by its law to get basically a 20% cut from 1990 levels by 2020. So I think 17% is the bare minimum that the United States needs to reduce emissions in order.
Although if you listen to Bill McKibben, it's not enough.
Well,
not nearly enough.
Right, yeah.
And not only Bill McKibben, but you think it is plausible, in other words, yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Technologically plausible. Politically, I think, is another question. What they've come around to is this 2-degree mark. You know, it's like let's stop it at 2 degrees of warming Celsius. And what scientists have already analyzed this and said that all of the pledges that are on the table around the world right now are not going to stop warming at 2 degrees.
Todd, join us. Thanks for waiting.
Yes, I'm very concerned about greenhouse gas emissions. However, I find sometimes talking about them, the people who find them paranoid is a useless argument, but I have a number of very conservative friends and have managed to speak to them about security initiatives, the idea of being independent of fossil fuels, not relying and sending American dollars to countries who don't like us, and just also economically about being able to be a leader in a new industry that probably will be the future eventually. Why can't we be as cunning as a serpent and gentle as a dove to offer benefits that might be more palatable to other parts of the population as well as environment?
Yeah, Craig Miller.
Well, energy security always resonates with people in the polls, and jobs always resonate, which is why you see the whole messaging shifting now in this country, you know, from global warming and climate change to renewable energy and clean tech. And that's why I think, as I said before, I think our best shot is to get a national renewable energy standard.
Let me go to some of the emails here, and I thank Todd for the call. Here's Doug in Concord who writes, this morning the story on the Cancun conference made light of the importance of local municipalities taking the lead in carbon reduction. I think the real local movements to lowering carbon is to give people solar power in a consumer form. What I mean by this is to make solar power a standardized plug-in form that can have the devices plugged directly into the stored power from the panels. It would be very easy to make it international because 12-volt DC is everywhere in the world thanks to the automobile. This way, the millions of Chinese do not have to wait for the infrastructure and the consumer will get a choice. Have the climate conferences ever looked at these kinds of solutions? This would be a great opportunity for consumer growth.
Well, the smart grid is certainly one piece of the city, which is what he's talking about, really, is one piece of the solution. But even that has been, as much promise as that holds, has been difficult to get moving. I mean, look at all of the resistance against smart meters here in California. There were protests over people putting the basic technology into homes that would enable this thing we call the smart grid. And we need those things in place before we can do any of this.
Mark writes, what I am expecting from the Obama administration vis-a-vis leadership is not much. Far from the hope and courage promised by this government, we have seen a willingness to back away from any policy that upsets the status quo. The drive toward complete control of the public commons by private corporations is on track, shepherded by eager Republicans and compliant Democrats. Who would have thought that the torch of environmentalism would be carried by the man who championed the Hummer? And along maybe a similar line, John in Berkeley writes, cap and trade will have loopholes large enough to drive an SUV through. The best way to do something like this is a carbon tax. More of your emails. Frank from San Rafael says, I read that Israel has made the innovation of ways to reduce greenhouse gas emissions their top priority, the goal being to help the world reduce its dependence on oil and the Middle East oil supplies. Any additional information on this?
Some other countries have been very successful. Japan, for example, in 2009, you know, their greenhouse gas emissions were actually down by almost 12%. But the problem is, in China they were up 8%, and in India they were up 6%, and it's not a level playing field around the world.
Bring another caller on here, and that's you, Abel. Good morning.
Thank you so much, Michael, for taking my call. A great show. I work with the Ella Baker Center for Human Rights in Oakland, which is doing some amazing work around climate change. And one of the beautiful things that's happening in Oakland is a coalition that's made up of workforce, nonprofits, also solar industry folks, and they've created the Oakland Climate Action Coalition. So I know one of the guests there mentioned something around local efforts, and I was just wanting to hear some comments around the Oakland Climate Action Coalition and local efforts that are happening here, as well as the involvement of communities of color and low-income to middle-income folks who we found in our work are some of the best stewards, for talking about climate change. Thank you so much.
Okay, Lewis Bloomberg.
Well, you know, thanks for the call. The Ella Baker Center has done great work, especially in California, and our polling showed that the communities of color were very much interested in preserving the environment and addressing climate change, and that many see the threat to their livelihood. So that's part of what we're trying to do, is connect people's sense of well-being to the impact that climate change is having on that. And that's, again, happening in our cities, where the threat of increased mortality from high heat days is going to go up.
It's all ongoing big educational challenge, isn't it?
Yes, and I think that that's one of the major lessons or outcomes I think I hope for from Cancun. It's going to shine a light on the whole climate change issue again and put this whole climate gate thing to bed, which was a hoax in the first place. 98% of the scientists of the world believe that humans are causing climate change. And so I think that the problem that we're having in Congress is that some of the people opposed to action are really opposed to the response, which is a government program. I think if we can separate those that are concerned about a government response from those that don't really believe in the science, that might be a way to have a conversation to move things forward.
Bottom line on Cancun, guarded optimism.
Guarded optimism. Cautiously optimistic.
Cautiously optimistic. Thank you both for being here with us on this segment of Forum. We will continue to monitor, obviously, and watch what's going on in Cancun. Thank you, our listeners, for being with us. Again, Craig Miller is senior editor at KQED's Climate Watch. You can check out his blog at kqed.org/climatewatch. And Lewis Bloomberg is director of California Climate Change Team for the Nature Conservancy. We also had Gretchen Weber with us, multimedia producer for KQED's Climate Watch. We are here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, with an hour repeat at 10 to 11 in the evening. Next hour is going to be all about, well, California rock and roll with Joel Selvin. I hope you'll join us for that. Thank you for joining us this hour. For all of us at KQED Public Radio, I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg.